Hello, everybody. Dr. Lonnie Stewart here from the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. Are you a physical therapy student about to start studying for the National Physical Therapy Examination? Or maybe you're a professor, a program director, or a clinical instructor who teaches DPT students preparing for the NPTE? Either way, we would recommend checking out our sponsor, NPTE Final Frontier, and the community they've built around preparing for and succeeding on the NPTE. That exam and the preparation that goes along with it can be long, tedious, difficult, and stress-inducing, but it doesn't have to be. NPTE Final Frontier has the tactics and resources to help address all of the usual barriers. They even have scholarships to help with NPTE study courses, FSBPT registration fees, and even research opportunities. And if that's not enough, they're even donating to the very first annual HET Podcast Scholarship to be awarded at the end of every year. Go to npteff.com for all of the details and use code HET for 10% off all purchases. Links to both the NPTE Final Frontier and their scholarship options are available in the show notes. And now, let's get ready to learn.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. F. Scott Field, and I've got with us another repeat guest, a friend of the podcast, somebody who helps out behind the scenes more than I can even say, for the first time ever appearing as Dr. Frankie Kaspar. Frankie, how the hell are you?
Oh, man. Happy to be here. Happy to have passed. I'm on cloud nine this week.
Yeah. So essentially we've been following Frankie's journey for a little while, and we're going to continue to do so because she's just an amazing story and has a lot of fun stuff going on in her life. But we really kind of wanted to capture the journey of like PT student to professional and passing the board exam and then, you know, going on to do maybe a specialty and then maybe a terminal degree, like who knows what's in the future, but we have some loose goals, we'll call them. It's a lot to take in. So tell me a little bit about your transition from student to now doctor of physical therapy. The last couple of weeks, give me the rundown. What's it been like? Tell me your experience.
Yeah, so the last couple of weeks have been a transition in and of itself. I've been studying full-time for this exam the past couple of weeks. So you're a student, you're in class, life is exciting, you're doing a bunch of different things. And then I went from that to sitting at my desk, which I'm at now, which I could happily return to now. I wouldn't even look at this desk the past week waiting for these results. You know, you spend all your time at this desk or wherever you're doing, coffee shop with your friends, wherever, just studying content. And it is brutal. It's not content that you like. It's content that you need to study to pass the test, unfortunately. So now I start work on Monday. So this transition has been a quick one.
No rest for the weary, huh?
No, not at all.
So about how long did you take to prep and study for this board exam?
So I remember being stressed because I graduated August 25th. I was done with clinical August 10th or 11th, took those 2 weeks off, and then went to Italy. After I graduated August 25th, I went to Italy August 26th. And I remember being stressed about the Italy trip because I was going to be gone for 2 weeks. And all of my friends had started studying the Monday after we graduated. So I remember being stressed and I said, it's no big deal. I'm just going to study while I'm in Italy, which is the most naive thing I've ever said to myself.
Right.
I didn't do a lick of studying in Italy, naturally. And then I came back. So I would say I started truthfully studying, like down and dirty studying, the second week of September. So that led me a month and a half, which I was stressed about. I didn't think that was enough time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing, right? It's different strokes for different folks. Some people need 16 weeks. Some people need 12. Some people need 4 to 6. You know yourself, you know what you need and what you don't, how well you prepared throughout the years. And truth be told,
right,
your exam scores, your grades, and then the practice exams and the PEAT, those all kind of are telltale signs of approximately how you're going to do. I know it's different times, obviously. When I took it, you could sign up for it whenever, you could schedule your time out when you wanted to take it. And so I could plan for how many weeks I needed. And You know, it was still a mess for me. And most of it was just testing anxiety. And I obviously back then didn't know I had ADHD, and now I do. So it makes a lot of sense. But like, I made it way worse than it needed to be. And my situation made it way worse. So like, now you have to take it in certain time frames throughout the year.
Right.
So you're locked in. And it's like, if you don't take it in that time frame, it's a long time to wait for the next one to open.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of a pain in the butt. But I mean, truthfully, you've been a very successful student. So I didn't see any reason why you wouldn't be a successful test taker. And I think having that mental break and that clarity, that trip you took is good for some people. I wish I had done something like that.
True.
You know, it, that to me, when I take those mental breaks, and I'm learning that more now, the mental breaks give me like a way to block, to clear the blockages and just like get rid of the things I need to, and then bring it back in and focus, you know?
Right.
So obviously stress is normal, right? You're sitting there, you're studying, you're getting ready, and you're like, oh, I don't know if there's enough time. I'm stressed, right? Tell me about those feelings from like sit down and start studying to going through the exam and taking it. Like, what did you feel? What did you go through?
When I started studying, I realized very quickly I was not studying. So I was reading words, which I feel like I never developed the good habit of what studying actually is in school. I was unfortunately, I would say, like a memorize and dump kind of gal through school. But I just was. I was fortunate to retain a lot in class. And then, you know, I would sharpen up skills a couple of days before exams. And this was an entirely different beast. So I remember I studied, or so I thought I was studying, for like 2 or 3 weeks. And I took a PEET. And my PEET did, I think it actually decreased 1 point from the PEET I took cold at the end of the program that the program makes us do.
Yeah.
And so I was now, like, you've got
imagine that. Imagine that. But in real life, I missed the NPT my first time by one question. I was like, oh, I didn't even study. I was, because I knew I was going from master's to DPT, transitional DPT. So I had time.
Oh my gosh.
So I missed it by one. So I'm like, all right, no big deal. This time I'll study, I'll buckle down, and I'll pass it no problem. I did worse the second time I took it and actually focused and studied. I missed it by like 5 or 6 questions. So that's anxiety started ramping for me. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I didn't study and I did fairly well. I did study. I did even worse. Now what?
Yep.
You know, so it was a mess. But take me through the actual test. Like, you go in, did you prep for like things like how to get there, sleep, diet, exercise, breathing, stress management? Did you do any of that stuff outside of the content?
So every time I took the PEET, I took 4 PEETs in my prep and 3 score builders. Mm-hmm. And every time I took those, I wanted to practice the rituals that I was going to do in the boards themselves. So each time I took the PEET, I got up and walked around after each section. So 50 questions, I'm done. I'm getting up, clearing my head, walking, and then returning. I can't do 100 straight. I just won't do it. So during the test, I got up every 50 questions. And then I remember one section was absolutely defeating me. And my program director, Dr. Malik, is like, whatever you need to do to get in your happy place, whether it's praying, whether it's deep breathing, whether it's opposite nostril breathing, whatever you do, whatever works for you, you have to do that. So I remember I was getting defeated in section 3. And that's the section that I despise, because you're coming off of the break. So in theory, you should feel good, but you have 2 whole sections ahead of you. And that feeling is horrible. So I remember I was getting defeated in section 3. And I leaned back. I'm in the middle of it. I'm on like question 20 something. And I leaned back. I had just botched like 5 questions in a row. I lean back. I do my deep breathing. I close my eyes. And then I come back. I finish the section and I get up and walk. So I think the deep breathing, when I realized I was starting to get defeated, and the getting up every 50 was huge for me.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, we go back to the very beginning, right? Rote memorization. We've told you this time and time again. I preach it on the show. Everybody knows rote memorization is not learning, folks.
No.
It took me getting through an EDD program to figure that out. So don't read and highlight and memorize and read and highlight and memorize. Don't do that stuff.
Yeah.
Look for the higher connections. Look for the learning, right?
Right.
Then you get into the test and you said some very, very key things there. The deep breathing, the, you know, stress management stuff while in the test and recognizing you have to get up and move around after each section, right? Break it down into those 50 question section bits and then get up, walk around to, you know, focus. Because I don't think people realize that even while you're taking practice exams and stuff, it is very hard to stay focused for 5 to 8 hours on one thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so now the test is 200 questions. Is that right? Or is it 250?
250.
Right. 250. So, and of the 250, 50 of them don't even count. They're using those for like Correct. Experimentation to see for future, but you don't know which ones those are. So you've got to Right. take every section like it matters, you know, and I'm not sure, maybe you know this, but I don't know if a whole section doesn't count or if it's questions sprinkled in throughout the entire 250 that don't count. That would actually be a good question to ask the FSBPT. I'll have to see if they have released any of that information. But regardless, so, you know, taking those breaks after each section is huge. Getting up and moving, walking around. Because, again, we know that the brain works better, you know, with a little blood flow, with some movement, with, you know, exercise, even if it's light and gentle. You know, just doing something, clear your head, take a break, take a moment, shake it off, you know, like Taylor Swift says, and then get back to work.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
All right. So you get, you know, through the first couple sections, you have that speed bump, you regroup, you refocus. Now you're on the path to finishing it out. What was that like? What was the final stretch like?
The final stretch was brutal. And I think it was brutal because obviously this is far more high stakes than my PEATs were. But I was taking my PEATs, I was averaging maybe 3 hours. And this, I took close to the whole 5 for the boards. I think it took like 440. And I just remember section 5. Traditionally, I love section 5 because it's my last section and I see the light at the end of the tunnel. But this section 5, I've never tested that long. So in hindsight, looking back, I should have prepared to be seated with my mind working for 5 hours because I've really only practiced 3, 3.5.
Yeah.
So the last push was a struggle for me. And it was also a struggle because I didn't feel great taking the boards. When I was taking the PEAT, I remember seeing questions and I would say, oh my gosh, I studied this. And I was very confident on the answers. And at least with the PEAT, I would narrow it down to 2 fairly easily.
Yeah.
The board, they're just a different beast. They're a different beast. So the final push was difficult. I just remember leaving the testing center and I sat in the parking lot for 1.5 hours. And I just sat there. I was just contemplating life. I simply just sat and stared.
Pretty normal response. You bring up a lot of good things there, right? One, the PEAT practice exams are invaluable. The more repetitions you can get of these difficult type questions, the better. Like there was a study out about the GMAT, I think it is, the test you take to like get into an MBA program or something like that. And there's a certain number of questions where if you just take at least this number of practice questions, you're bound to do well. You're bound to do very well, right? Same thing with this.
Right.
It's just like the SAT. This is a relatively coachable test, right?
Yeah.
And so the more reps and the more practice you get, you just start to see how questions are written and how they ask them and what they're looking for.
Right.
And how you can find the right answer. That was a big one for me, was I would get it down to 2 and then I would pick what I thought was the right one. Then I'd second guess myself and switch it. And it wasn't until I'd stopped doing that and just trusted my gut and went with it that I finally passed the exam.
Yes. You
know? So a lot of times I think just stick with your gut instinct. The first one you pick,
I agree.
Get it down to the 2, just stick with it. Because most of the time, I think your gut's going to be right.
Yeah, you know? I don't change answers. I learned that quickly.
Yeah. And then you also talk a lot about testing endurance, right? That's a big one. Like, like we said, it's hard to focus for 5 to 8 hours, right? Like if you've got accommodations, I think you get 1.5 hours or double time, whatever it may be. So that can be a long time sitting in a room. And like you said, just sitting, staying focused for, you know, hour after hour after hour for 5 hours is tough to do, you know? So like, prepping for that test anxiety, if you don't take those tests and those repetitions and try to time it out and map it out four or five hours, it's going to be tough to like bring it across the finish line. Were you able to get like a snack or anything like that, like in the middle during your break, like a granola bar or something, or just some sort of pick-me-up, a healthy pick-me-up?
Yeah, so during my break after section two, you get 15 minutes. I walked around the building and I was eating an apple and trail mix. And then after each section, after every 50 questions, my program director, Dr. Malik, said, get a mint, something minty to stimulate something different going on. So I would get a lifesaver after every 50 questions. It was like my treat for
Treat.
finishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Pavlov's dog, right? We get
Seriously.
conditioned into like every 50 minutes, I get a treat. I got a lifesaver coming up, you know,
Yep.
something to look
Yep.
forward to. All right. So you finish the exam, you go outside, and you contemplate life for the next hour and a half or so,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
I kind of did that after each time. I definitely would leave the testing center feeling like I got hit by a truck.
Yes.
I honestly didn't feel like I did any better or worse on any of them. I just felt like, holy cow, that was a lot. And I felt physically drained because of how emotionally spent I was, you know?
I agree.
Like it was hard to like get my body to move
Yes.
because I was flush in the face, my brain was like mush, and I just wanted to like lay down on a couch and pass out for a day, you know, just
Yeah.
like I'll get to it tomorrow. So what kind of thoughts go through your mind when you sit there for an hour and a half and you're like, wow, I just took probably the biggest test of my life to date. What's going on at that point?
Yeah. I remember I FaceTimed one of my friends who's done. I tested at 9, she tested at 8. I spoke to a friend and then I'm like, all right, what? I can't just sit here all day. So what are we gonna do? I thought about the test for a little bit and you know, you overthink. All these questions start rattling off in your head. Your first instinct is you want to Google all these
Yeah.
answers. And it's like, wow, don't do that. Do not do that. Avoid that at all costs. So I just remember all of these questions that I was struggling with and that I had marked were just rushing back into my head. So that was brutal. When it finally left, I blasted upbeat music to try to shake the thoughts out of my head. I went and got a huge meal. And after every Pete I was taking through my prep, those were my best runs. I would go on a long run after the Pete. And I had packed a bag of my running stuff in my car, thinking, I'm not sure if I'm going to want to cry, sleep,
Yeah.
run. I don't know what I'm going to want to do. Running was not happening for me in that moment. I got a huge meal and I hibernated and I slept.
I honestly feel like the brain does so much work in that 5 hours that your body just needs the rest. It needs to recoup,
Yes.
you know?
Yes.
And I love how fresh this is, how you're just literally coming off it, because again, all those memories and all that you went through is still there in the forefront of your mind a little bit, because years from now, you'll be able to go back on this and look back on it and just see what it was like and what the experience was like and the memories.
Yes.
So,
And I remember even I was even doing the numbers at that point because I was running through my head rationally. After I was getting all this emotional thoughts, then I was like, okay, let's think about it rationally. How many did I mark? How many do I need to pass? I'm whipping out my calculator. I'm doing the numbers just as a coping mechanism because I'm like, well, how much of the ones I marked were could have been one of the 50 that are not graded? I was a mess for the for that evening. And then the subsequent couple days, I bounced back because I was distracted and made a bunch of plans, which was good.
like about how long then now is it from when you take the test to when you get the results?
It was exactly a week
Oh,
for me.
wow. That's
I
awesome.
took the test Wednesday and we got the results Wednesday,
Yeah, I feel like
the
it was like
following.
4 to 6 weeks for us. It was like, you
Oh,
know, through a
gosh.
carrier pigeon they sent the results. It was you know, it was a long time. It was brutal, but yeah, it's a much more smoother, streamlined process now, which is great. So you guys
Yes.
take the test, a week later you get the results. And it's hard to do things like calculate that and stuff because I feel like there's a shifting of the numbers each time the test is taken as far as like what it takes to pass.
Right.
I feel like there's a little wiggle room there each time the test is run. So it's not exactly a set number every time that you need to pass. So now you finish, a week later you get the results, you find out you passed, you're ecstatic, and now you start work on Monday. How did that
Yeah.
all happen? How did that come to be? How did this like tell me about the job process and like, you know, finding that job and now getting ready to start and what that feels like.
So I did my last clinical at Kessler in West Orange, and I wanted that to be my last clinical because I wanted that to be my first job, is the thought process I had as a student. So I did that last clinical. It was May to August, 12 weeks there. I was on the stroke floor, inpatient rehab. I just fell in love with it, And they offered me a job when I was a student finishing up that clinical. So I interviewed when I was still on clinical, got offered the position. I was you know, we spoke about when the boards are, when the license might come, if I pass first time. So I vowed that I would not work during the studying period because I'm like a side job kind of gal. I've had way too many jobs during school. And I was like, you know what? This is my time. I'm not doing this while I'm studying. So I made that promise to myself, but I'm like, you know what? The second I'm done with this test, I'm starting work because I'm itching now.
Yeah.
So Monday I start as an aide because New Jersey doesn't do temp license. So I'm starting as an aide Monday. I'm onboarding as a PT. So the second the license comes in, I could start being a PT. But
what's the expected time for that license to come in?
You know, everybody's telling me different things. I have no idea. I completed everything on my New Jersey checklist. People have been telling me 1 week. People have been telling me a month. I have no idea. I have no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
So all I know is that I have to be working because if it takes more than a month, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I'd rather be working.
And now for a quick shout out to our newest sponsor, Varela Financial. If you're a physical therapist and you have student loan debt, you got to talk to these guys. What makes them unique is that they view financial planning like running hurdles on a track. And for PTs, the first hurdle many of us run into is student loan debt. Varela Financial will help you get over that hurdle. They not only take the time to explain to you which plans you individually qualify for and how those plans work, but they also take the time to show you what your individual case looks like, mapped out within each option. So if you're looking for help on your student loan debt or any area of personal finances, we recommend working with them. I use Varela Financial personally, and they were able to help me lower my student loan repayment from about $1,800 a month down to about $135 per month simply by finding the right repayment plan that best fit me, my family, and our life goals. You can check them out at VarelaFinancial.com. Link is in the show notes if you need it for reference, and tell them the HET podcast crew sent you. And now back to the show.
Yeah, it's not going to be bad work. I mean, you know,
absolutely,
you're still in the department, you're learning the ins and outs, still learning the EMR and the system and stuff. You're poking
and
around.
Meeting everybody, which is the goal as well. Yeah.
That's wild though. Like they, you know, you have the pass, but I get it because once the pass is there and you forward all the information, they now have to take it and process it. So I get
correct.
You know, there being a little bit of turnaround time.
Correct.
It just
I'm hoping
like,
it's not much. It would
I was
be gonna amazing
say
if
it feels like with technology these days we should be able to turn this stuff around pretty quickly.
I would hope. I hope I'm done onboarding as a PT and then I get the license and I never have to be an aide. I just be a PT.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I secured that just in case it takes a while.
Sure. Awesome. All right. So, and that's not uncommon for students to have their last clinical end up being like a job, like a trial run, like a test.
Absolutely.
Run. Yep. And then they interview and they love it and they get the job and they stay, you know, that's very common, common practice. It doesn't have to be, but it definitely can be. Some people hate their last clinical rotation. They're like, thank God I didn't end up there, you know? So definitely, you know, several different options there, but all right, so you've got this job lined up. You're now a licensed physical therapist, you know, doctor, right? You've got your doctorate. What do you see in your future now? Like, what have you started any sort of goal setting or plan or?
Yes.
Tell us about it. Let's hear how this is going to look.
So I know you have a little bit of insight into what I've been thinking. So I'm unsure still about the residency situation. Kessler has a residency. So that's on the table as a goal.
A specific residency or multiple different ones? What do they have?
They have a neuro residency.
Okay.
So regardless of the route I take to get there, the goal is neuro board certification.
Okay.
So I see that in my future. However I get there, whether it's self-study, whether it's residency, neuro board certification, I see that in 2 years.
Right.
That's my 2-year plan. Then the window kind of opens because I see myself end game, it's academia. Just the route, I'm not sure the route. I could see myself peeking in as guest lecturers here and there. I could see myself TAing to get my foot in the door. ELC was, at first I was like, student has no place being at ELC. And then I went to ELC and I got to pick the brains of all of these folks in academia, which was the greatest thing. And it really kind of helped me set my goal, or at least show me my options.
Yep.
So that's end goal. Board cert, first goal. End goal, academia. The middle stuff, I'm not sure.
The good news is, you know, for that NCS, the neuro certification, like, you need at least a year of treating that population, whether it's residency or self-study, to even sit for it. So, you know, you'll get some good experience. You'll get your hands wet, you know, and get down and dirty and try stuff, right? Which is great.
Right.
Like you said, the in-between becomes fun because you can take it 10 different ways and it doesn't matter how you get to the end goal, you know, and I would even argue it's better to do a couple years, you know, as a clinician before you jump into academia for sure. Cause you need to have a little bit of real life experience to see what it's like. If possible, it's even best to keep practicing while you head toward academia and get into academia.
Right.
Just again, so you can have your finger on the pulse, right? So that you can show your students that you're still treating. You know, I kind of try to do that with my mobile business. I treat a couple of patients a year now. It's not anything wild or crazy, but I do like to keep my skills up and my manual stuff up. The best part about it too is that you decide the path. There is no right or wrong path, you know. Definitely dabble as like a lab assist or guest lecturer. That's a great way to start, you know, your teaching career, is just try some different things at some different universities. And, you know, it pays pretty nice as a nice little side gig, but also it gets you reps. It gets you experience. Cause I will say this, the one thing I learned after 15, 16 years of treating patients and then transitioning into academia, I had an EDD and I just thought I knew all the things so I could just teach them, right? I have all this experience in geriatrics and, you know, acute care and, you know, SNFs and home health and all the things, outpatient, ortho, you name it. I did it all, right? So I just assumed I could show up on day one and teach. Well, that was a rude awakening because it was literally a dramatic shift in jobs. It was an occupation change. It was not as easy as I expected. There's a lot that goes into academia. And I will say that APTA's Educational Leadership Conference is a great place for somebody who is interested in academia and just doesn't know yet. It's open to clinicians. It's open to students. It's mostly academicians. It's a bunch of like dorks and nerds geeking out about education, which is my homies, right? That's my people.
I love it.
And I actually personally like that conference better than CSM because it's way more intimate. You know, it's 1500 people as opposed to 15,000. And I love the conversations throughout the day and then into the evening, because it's like everybody there is trying to fight the good fight and like make education better. And everybody's got their like thing or their way of trying to do that. And I love that because it's not just one way to fix it. It's multifactorial. We have all these issues we got to address. And luckily some of the brightest minds and smartest people are working on each of those issues. So
yes,
I love that conference. I learn a lot there every time. My network grows every time I go. We have a lot of people, we meet a lot of people for the podcast, which I love. So we have a lot of episodes now lined up over the next couple, you know, months for people that we've met through ELC. So it's been great. And I think, you know, realizing that teaching, the act and art and science of teaching, is a skill, and it's a skill set that has to be learned. Like I said, I thought I could just show up day one and do it. It's not the case. It is an art. You have to find your own style and flow of teaching to really transfer the knowledge and make it stick. Right. And I'm still working on that. That's a work in progress, and obviously will be for the rest of my life, right? If we say we're going to be lifelong learners, that applies to being lifelong teachers too. You know,
because
you've got to keep working on getting the feedback and what works and what doesn't, and adjusting and, you know, finding your own flow. So that's definitely a little bit of a, you know, a tidbit that I wish I had known when I had gotten into it, is it, you'll either love it or hate it. And then once you love it and you go that direction, it is a drastic change of career. So you have to be ready for that. You know, and there is a lot of other admin and stuff that goes along with, you know, teaching, because it's not just teaching. When you become a full-time core faculty member, half of your job is teaching. The other half is divided between research and then service to the university and to the students. So, right. You know, those are three pillars of teaching, and there's a lot of that stuff that I didn't even realize that goes on. So, you know, it's when your professors seem like they're stressed or slacking, right? Realize that there's other stuff going on besides just your class, I promise. So
yes,
cut them a little slack, you know?
Yes.
But yeah, so I love the plan. I love the you know, the life map out, and you have the rough goals in mind. How you get there, the winding path and journey, totally up to you. And the cool thing is that the more you practice, the more you do things, the more you grow your network, more and more opportunities will come to you along the way.
Yes.
And if you don't have that North Star of that end goal of what you want to do and what you want to become, it's hard to kind of decide which opportunities to say yes to and which opportunities to say no to. Right.
Right.
If it's going to move you toward that North Star, then it's a hell yes. Right. If it's going to pull you away from that North Star, even if it's a good opportunity, it may have to be a no. And again, just something I wished I knew earlier in my career, because I said yes to everything.
Well, and that's what I think my first challenge is going to be as a new professional, is as a student, at least I feel as though I had more time as a student to say yes to all these things. Yeah. And they single-handedly aided my transition to new professional and allowed me to build this fantastic network. But now as a new professional, I'm starting a full-time job. I can't be saying yes to all these things that I was saying yes to as a student.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to learn that skill of finding my North Star and staying true to it.
Yeah. And here's the cool thing too. Like you said, like it is a winding path, and how you get there is not going to be linear. And that's great, because it can morph and adapt and change a little bit, but for the most part, it's going to be rooted in your values and your vision. Having good core values and knowing what you stand for will certainly help drive that as well. So even if the North Star changes, and let's say it starts out as like, I want to be the best neurospecialist I can be. And then you get along the line and you realize like, oh, like I actually really kind of like the peds portion of neuro. And so now like you're shifting a little bit, right? Like you never know what's going to happen. I was a sports ortho bro for life. I was going to be the New York Mets PT. I just knew it, right?
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, life kind of threw me some curves. I had some different opportunities come my way that I said yes to. And you know, I end up in the geriatric setting, and I actually really love the geriatric population. So that was unexpected for me, you know, and then I thought I would never teach. And now here I am teaching full time. So like my North Star has definitely changed and morphed over time, but now I've got one. I've got, you know, that concrete goal and vision of trying to help as many people as possible, just, you know, enjoy the profession and pay down their student loans quicker and more efficiently. So that's not a stressor for them. And they're not leaving the profession or feeling burned out or whatever it may be, you know? So that's really how I feel I'm going to make the most impact in the world of healthcare and physical therapy. So that's my North Star. That's where I'm heading. That won't ever change for me. I love that. I found my thing. Took a little, you know, I was an English major when I started. So like it, you know, was not a traditional startup anyway. It just kind of, you know, morphed over time and I learned to roll with it. The one thing I will say that I had a mentor tell me, saying yes to everything will get you out of Egypt, but saying no to certain things will get you to the promised land. Right.
Mm.
And so it was an interesting, you know, phrase when he said that. I was like, huh? Yeah, you're right. Like all the things I said yes to helped me build the skills and stack the skills to be where I am now. Right. And again, I say this time and time again, I'm not a big believer in luck. I feel like you work very hard to get to a certain point. Then when the opportunities present themselves, you're ready to pounce on them because you worked so hard to get there. You put yourself in the right room with the right people and the right skill sets to say yes to the right opportunities. And so, you know, I think that becomes an easier way to know when to say yes and when to say no. And it's not easy at first, for sure, because you just don't know what you don't know. And so you're starting out as an early professional is fun and exciting, and it should be. But you have to have those goals. You have to have that values and that North Star to start, so it gives you direction. What challenges do you foresee? What do you think may be coming down the pipeline that you may have to like overcome or worry about over the next, you know, 5 years or so?
Burnout certainly is top on my list. Again, saying no is going to be something I learned quickly. I fear that I'm going to want the next thing sooner than I think. I think 5 years of practicing, I'm going to be itching for the next thing. That's what I fear. And not that I fear it, but I think those will be challenges that I face in a 5 year window.
I love that. Luckily, there's a lot of really good resources on burnout and how to avoid that. We just, yes. Rebecca Griffith and I just presented at the TPTA on that. And a lot of it has to do with leaning on your North Star and knowing your values, you know, and, you know, kind of sensing and witnessing like self, you know, knowing yourself and when you're starting to get and show some signs of burnout and how to quick, you know, avoid that. There's some low hanging fruit ones, right? Exercise, deep breathing, all this stuff,
right?
Stress management.
Right.
But then you need bigger bricks and bigger blocks to build, you know, a strong foundation to beat burnout, because we're seeing it more and more. And a lot of it is because they don't have direction. You know, they don't have that joy and that love for what they do, or they have outside stressors like student loans or like life in general, and they're not sure how to handle them very well, you know? So just having those bigger goals and those, the map to get there and really like laying that out can really help you in times when things do get tough. Because if you don't like it, if you're not passionate about it, if, you know, if it's just kind of a job and you're just clocking in, clocking out, 'cause you need the money to pay back student loans, that's not going to fulfill you like that.
No,
you know, you're not going to be happy doing that. I chased the dollar for 8-10 years and it was the worst decade of my life. I made more money every time I switched jobs, but I wasn't happy. I wasn't in settings I enjoyed. I wasn't at places I enjoyed. The cultures there were not great. It wasn't until after I realized like, hey, why don't I just do things that make me happy? Why don't I do more of that?
Yes.
That's when I sat down and reevaluated, that's when things really got, you know, fun for me. And that's what has kept me fulfilled ever since. So, all right. So now we've got big picture, big plan. What about external things outside of the job, outside of physical therapy? You know, what are things that you want to do now more of? What are things that you want to get back into? Or like, what are like hobbies or just things that like you really want to do that are unrelated to the world of physical therapy?
One of my best friends, she was home studying for her NCLEX. And to get out of the house while we were studying, we would go on daily walks. And now that the weather's breaking, like, you know what? We need to find a winter hobby. So we're picking up pickleball.
Awesome.
So that's something I'm looking forward to getting into. So my transition from school to home, where I'm living now, I'm excited to join a gym and start my routine. Like, it sounds small, but that's, I've been craving getting out, going to the gym, going to work. Like, that's just a routine that I like. Bringing back the weekly trivia nights, that's something I love doing.
Yeah,
my dad plays guitar, so he goes to open mic nights once a week. So I'm finally looking forward to doing that.
Yeah,
just things that are totally removed from the field, totally removed. And granted, I still look forward to my evening meetings that I have during the week for whatever, whether it's APTA or something PT related. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have things to look forward to that are completely removed.
Yeah. And that's part of beating burnout, right? Is having hobbies, having other interests, like completely removing yourself from the profession at times, you know?
Right.
That becomes super important. And I think, you know, like for me, I just remember when I was doing my dissertation, I didn't read a book that I wanted to read for 3 years. Like, it was either journal articles or textbooks or whatever. Yep. I had to read to like get to the next portion of my dissertation. It was awful. And as an English major and somebody who loved to read, that was brutal. That was a tough 3 years. And I remembered as soon as I finished my dissertation, and I was done, I picked up Da Vinci Code because, you know, everybody had been talking about it. I heard it was a great book and I read it in like a night. Like, I couldn't put it down. I was like, wow. That's what it feels like to get back to reading again. Like, and I'm a slow reader.
Crazy. So
for me to do that, it was nuts. But you need those things, you know, you really do. And I think that you've got a good list already. Pickleball sounds like a ton of fun. I know Dr. Penny Goldberg is super big into pickleball and working
nice.
With patients that have injured themselves and how to avoid those injuries in pickleball. So I know that it's a booming sport right now. It's becoming more popular. We like to ask everybody on the show this one final question, and you've heard this before several times, and maybe it'll change over your years, maybe it won't. What is one thing that you would like to change about the field of higher education, whether it be DPT or otherwise, and how would you change it?
I remember what I said last time, and it's my visceral answer this time. It is student debt.
Yeah.
I have no answer to this question of how I would change it. I think it's an impossible problem. And I think people are fighting the good fight and doing what they can. I have no idea what the answer is.
Yeah. Well, luckily, I know a couple of people, and it is something that's being presented at a lot of the conferences now, right? The
student which is great.
Debt crisis, if you will. Yes. And yeah, we know that it's multifactorial. It's not just one thing.
Right.
So all that we can do is the things that we can control. And I think, you know, the biggest thing for me, obviously I've been beating this drum for years, but I think you find a setting and a job that you love and a place that you love working at, and that gives you your base foundational income. And then you supplement whatever you need to like pay down the student loans with a side job or a side gig or a side hustle relatively related to your job, or maybe not, maybe it's completely different, but you have the skills and the knowledge in the background. We might as well just, you know, do more of that and really get good at become an expert and authority in what we love and own our zone of genius, you know?
True.
So I hope more people will start doing that, because I think we'll really be able to show the value of physical therapists, not just in one-on-one patient care, but in all the other avenues that we have to help people. So until there's some sort of regulation on like how high cost of education can go, like we need somebody overseeing that, because nobody is right now. And it hockey sticked around the mid-80s. It just jumped up and it hasn't gone down since. And I don't think it will until it hits a breaking point where people just stop going. And we're starting to see nationally declining admissions numbers and application numbers for even under.
Yeah. The debt to income, that's an ugly ratio.
Yeah. And it's not everywhere. There's handfuls of professions where it's bad, but PT just happens to be one of them. So,
yes,
you know, my hope is we can find some ways to mitigate that and really, you know, make it a little more palatable. My big thing has always been just leverage. It's how you leverage your degree and your skill set.
Yeah.
You know, if you leverage it appropriately, it's a great profession. If you don't, it's going to be a bumpy ride for you. Well, Frankie, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I'm so excited to call you a peer and you know, somebody who has just freshly joined the profession and is going to do amazing things. And we'll keep following your journey. Like I said, I love to see these next couple of years and what they'll bring. Where can people reach out to you? Where can they find you on social media if they just have follow-up questions or want to follow your journey and see what you're up to these days?
Absolutely. First, thank you. And second, LinkedIn and Twitter is where I'm most professionally active. So I think my Twitter is at Frankie Casper and my LinkedIn is Francesca Casper. That's my full name. Those are where I'm most active professionally.
Awesome.
I'd love to connect.
We'll put those in the show notes so people can find you easily. Frankie, absolute pleasure. Looking forward to the next several years of your career.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that episode was entertaining as much as it was informational and educational. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our past episodes, we ask you to please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. And please share out the episodes to those who you feel may be able to benefit from them. We also urge you to follow us on all social media platforms at HET Podcast and let us know what topics or experts you would like to hear from in future episodes. And just as a reminder, none of the information on today's show should be considered medical advice. It's simply infotainment or edutainment to help educate our audience. For medical advice, we always advise you to reach out to your preferred medical professionals, and we'll see you on the next show.